Writing Persuasive Messages. Welcome to the 9th of 13 podcasts based on our new book, Business Communication, Rhetorical Situations, that's available from Broadview Press. That's broadview.com. When Aristotle talked about rhetoric, he defined it as persuasion, the art of persuasion. So at its heart, rhetoric really centers around how do you get other people to do things you want them to do. I mean, sometimes the right thing is so obvious that it takes very little to persuade the rest of your team members to agree on a plan of action. Enjoy those moments. They're rare. More often than not, you'll have to persuade your coworkers, your supervisor, and others that the plan of action you have in mind is the one everyone should follow. If you're new to an organization or are a junior member of the team, the burden of proof will be on you to persuade the rest of the team that yours is the right solution. In today's episode, we're going to talk about how to recognize and respond to communication situations where your readers may resist or oppose the message that you must deliver. Now, this kind of communication is called a persuasive message, and it includes direct requests to do something and diagnostic, or might better be understood as problem-solving, messages. A diagnostic or problem-solving message is a message that diagnoses a problem and then presents a solution to the reader for them to approve or to carry out. So motivating readers to act takes more than persuading them to consider a different point of view. You have to incite them to action as well. There's really three kinds of ways in which people will object to something that you might be proposing. They do not see how your proposal or request meets their needs or is advantageous to them. So part of what you're having to do here is to show how this works for them. A second kind of objection is misunderstanding or misinformation. If readers are misinformed or misunderstand something about your request or proposal, they may object to it. So part of what you're doing here is you want to clarify what you're actually talking about. A third kind of objection results from emotional reasons. Sometimes people object to your proposal or request because they are invested in keeping things as they are. Now, by constructing a thorough argument, you can overcome objections based on emotional reasons. In most cases, there are some cases where you're just not going to get anywhere. So how do you organize a direct request message? The way to do that is to start with some kind of introduction. In the introduction, you're going to give background to the request. The second paragraph may begin with where you're asking for the requested action, the thing that you're looking for, the direct request. The third paragraph gives complete information about how the reader can comply with that request, can go ahead and do what you're asking them to do. The fourth may give an incentive to act, something that gives them a reason to act. And the fifth counters a possible objection to the request. In our book, on page 237 and 238, you'll see two examples of these kinds of direct request messages, or persuasive messages. We got one recently from the government of the province we live in just a couple of weeks ago. One of us had not filled in a form to avoid a tax. So there's this thing, it's called a speculation of vacancy tax. And you have to fill in a form so that you don't have to pay that on any property that you might own. Well, one of us didn't do that. I'm not going to say who, but one of us didn't do that. And so we got this letter and it says, hey, you know, you have not yet completed your declaration for the tax. It was due March 30th. It's now in the middle of summer. However, if you act now, there is still time to declare and claim your exemption. So that's your opening paragraph. It sets the background and it opens up an opportunity. You may have thought that you couldn't do this, but you still can. Then the next paragraph talks more about how most, like 99% of people in our area, do not pay this tax, which is to say, the reader, you probably don't have to pay the tax. You just have to fill out the form. And so the third paragraph makes it clear that you have to do this. It's not an option. And then they get into the third part of that direct request where you're telling them how to do this. And we've got two sections. They're numbered 1 and 2. There's bullets in them. They tell you exactly the declaration code you need, the letter ID you need, what social insurance number you're going to have or social security number. And then it says how else you can do this. You can go online and do it, or you can just phone somebody and go and do it. And they've even got translators. Then they have the second last paragraph I won't call it the threat, but it's definitely that you really have to do this. And that's your incentive to act. So that's direct request persuasive messages. Persuasive or problem-solving messages are a little bit different, just because there isn't the same sort of steps that you need to follow in order to do to comply with the request and that kind of thing. It's more open-ended in that way. They're organized a little bit differently because they start with by establishing or building common ground between readers and writers. So that's a different kind of move. Then they describe the problem that's shared. So it's, we both have this problem and we're trying to come to a solution that works for both. That's the third part. What is that solution? The fourth part then explains why the proposed action is necessary and how the reader is going to benefit from it. There's a little bit of that in that text problems and that text direct request message. I mean, you have a problem, reader. You don't fill out this form, you're going to pay thousands of dollars. So that's a different kind of thing. No, that's really like you need to act and here's how to act. Here they're trying to persuade me that there's some things I need to do and it's best for all of us if we do it, which means there's an option not to do it. With the tax request message, there's no option. I have to do that. So that's kind of how you can sort of separate these things out. So when I think about the problem-solving messages, they're much more a classical kind of argument thing where the reader actually has options. They can think this or they can think that or they can do this or they could do that. And it's much more like a proposal where you're proposing and looking for funding in order to support a particular project. And you're trying to persuade somebody that the project is important, your solution works, and is a good way to go forward. So the last thing that you do in a problem-solving message is then explain how they can comply, what's our next step kind of thing. When you're working, it's when you're in a particular work group and you're trying to decide on a way forward. If you're in a strategic meeting and you're trying to write up the results of that meeting, you're trying to come to an understanding of what strategy to pursue. To me, those are classical argumentative situations. And that's where you're having to use this kind of format. Well, thanks for listening. If you want to get a copy of the book, go to broadview.com and either request a copy if you're an instructor, or you can buy a copy there if you're interested in having a copy for yourself. More information and materials to support instructors is available at our website, wecanwrite.ca. Thanks for listening.